This is The Feed with Amber Mack and Michael B. on Canada Talks, Sirius XM 167.
Hello and welcome to The Feed with Amber Mack.
And Michael B. for everything new now and next.
We have you covered for what's happening in the world of tech and what's trending online.
On the show, we tell you which tech company bought the most expensive U.S. office building since the pandemic began.
Plus, how Facebook plans to push more positivity in its feeds to combat hate.
Also on the show, Elon Musk takes a giant leap forward for space tourism.
And we talk to the car company that is making sustainable sneakers.
That's all coming up right here on The Feed with Amber Mack and Michael B.
Trending up.
Amber Mack, you have been crazy busy. You did an exceptional job. For those people that didn't see it, you had election coverage, and it was quite a long night.
Yeah, we did election coverage from our studio. So Chris and I went to the studio for the evening, and we were reporting live for CHCH News. And it was a ton of fun in the sense that, although I was stressed about the election in general, it was fun. You know, Michael, you can appreciate this being in the TV business, how far we've come because of the pandemic and just the freedom that we were able to really be like a remote studio. We switched cameras. We, you know, had our own visuals throughout our live hits. And it's just, it's cool to see that, you know, even during difficult times, it's pushed us in directions where all of a sudden it's allowed for more freedom and flexibility to, basically do media in new and interesting ways.
That's kind of what I was going to ask, though. Did it feel better and easier because you were in control of everything that you used? And what I mean by that is whether you used a graphic or you looked down at Twitter and looked at some tweets and then reported back into the coverage. Because obviously in traditional news, we used to have to sit there on a desk and wait for everyone else to tell you in your ear what was coming or what was, you know, what was going to be used on the screen. Or you'd have to have one eye out on a screen, and it popped up. Hopefully it popped up. And if it didn't, you'd have to carry on with something else.
Yeah, I mean, it was cool in the sense that, you know, sometimes the bigger team you have, the more complex things get. So because it's just Chris and me, and we've worked together for eons, when we were
and
really
lived together for eons.
Exactly. So when we're watching what's happening online, and I send Chris a tweet, you know, 30 seconds before we go to air, and he can bring it up on his screen, it's harder to do that in a TV studio environment, because like as an on-air person, I don't have access necessary to the tech team, or they don't have time because they're working on other stuff. So it was really cool because we actually got to run the show on our end. And that meant that we would be very reactive to the social media conversations and very efficient with it. So, you know, just kudos to the team at CHCH because they let us do that and run with it. And it was fun. You know, it was, I like politics and the tech side of it, obviously the part that I get to cover is much more interesting and evidence-based than punditry.
Well, exactly. So it was a lot of punditry going on. So let's get right to what other people are talking about. What are people talking about this week in the news?
Yeah, this is really interesting because we've heard about, I don't want to say the collapse of commercial real estate and be more sensational than needed, but of course the future of work is changing, fewer people going back to the office. And yet, according to CNBC, Google plans to buy a New York office building that's worth $2.1 billion. As we mentioned off the top of the show, this would be the most expensive U.S. office building purchase since the pandemic began.
Yeah, I thought that was really interesting to cover this just because we saw a lot of headlines about how everyone was leaving New York and they weren't coming back and people were relocating into every other city. And the future of New York seemed bleak if you followed the headlines. But it is interesting, as you said, you know, Google, a huge company, it has its headquarters in California, as you said. Now, of course, they have leased this building in New York, and now they're exercising their right to buy it. I do think it's interesting that they're moving to purchase the buildings, whereas other people are trying to get out of their leases and or move elsewhere. I think that people will be coming back, and I think that we will see people return to the office. Because, again, if you looked at all the headlines during the pandemic, everyone was complaining that they didn't see anybody. So I think that we will see a bit more of a return to normal. And at least, you know, maybe it's, you know, 1 or 2 days a week max working from home, just with more flexibility.
Yeah, absolutely. And this will be really kind of a campus for Google. So it sounds like it will be a multi-purpose destination for people. And let's be honest, a lot of people in New York who want to work at Google, you know, you probably don't have a big enough apartment necessarily to have an office in your apartment. So this provides some of that flexibility. Okay, so speaking about big tech companies, over to you, Michael, with the latest from Facebook.
I don't know how to tackle this one. Hopefully I do this one okay. But basically, obviously, last week we talked about the report that was suggesting that Facebook was completely aware of the harm that Instagram does to young people specifically, I don't know why I have a difficulty with that word, but specifically young girls. And so now it's come to light that Facebook CEO Mark Zuckerberg, who everybody's familiar with, has personally approved an internal effort to push positive stories about the company via users' news feed. So I don't know if you've seen this already yet, but when you log into Facebook and there's usually stories and things flashing about at the top of your mast, that's where they're going to be putting and are putting positive stories about how amazing Facebook is. Now, the idea behind this is to obviously try and show that they're not as bad or mean a company as they're made out to be in the media, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, I think also they're just trying to deal with this issue that they have. I mean, many issues, layers of issues in terms of the content being problematic for a number of different reasons. We're going to talk in Socially Speaking a little bit more about this because it's beyond just, you know, how these platforms affect teens. There are many other issues. To be honest with you, before we go to the final story, I will say, you know, the headline I want to see from Facebook right now is Facebook hires 10,000 people to deal with problems ahead of them. And the reason I say that, Michael, is that I don't think, you know, with the small team Facebook has and the enormous amount of revenue that they make, I don't think they can accomplish what they need to accomplish at the size of the company they are right now from a human resources perspective. They need an army of people to be out there to really help. And that would be, I think, change for the better.
I think you're right. Just quickly, just so people fully understand what you're saying is they need to be fixing things like scandals, reducing outsiders' access to internal data, burying a potential negative report about its content and increasing its own advertising to showcase its brands. So not a lot to cover.
Oh, yeah. All right. So last story, speaking about another giant technology company, SpaceX and Elon Musk. This is an interesting one. They recorded another first for the space tourism industry after four private citizens returned from orbit and they landed safely off the coast of Florida. So the space race and entrepreneurs continues, Michael.
Yeah, so just with this one, this is different to everything else. They spent nearly 72 hours in weightlessness. So that's why this one is another quite a large step forward for the space industry. Now, when we return, how a new pair of sneakers is helping a car company share its carbon neutral future.
The Feed with Amber Mack and Michael B. For everything new, now and next on Canada Talks, Sirius XM 167. In the Spotlight.
In support for World Car Free Day, Volvo Cars Canada footwear and footwear company Casca have launched a limited edition sneaker. Incorporating long-term sustainable and circular approaches to design, the shoe is in recognition of the brand's shared vision for a carbon neutral future. To talk more about this is Matt Gerges, Managing Director of Volvo Car Canada. Hello, Matt.
Hello, good morning.
Thank you so much for joining us. And we are going to talk about this initiative and the sneakers. But first, tell us how this idea started in terms of connecting with Casca and just the early days of this idea for this limited edition sneaker.
Absolutely. So, well, first, it's a pleasure to be with you guys. And we're very excited about this partnership with Casca and of course, these great shoes. So we've been looking on ways to celebrate World Car Free Day. And as part of that process, we came across Casca. They are a shoe manufacturer and designer out in Vancouver. And their DNA aligns very closely with ours. Our company purpose is freedom to move in a personal, sustainable way. And we're focused a lot on sustainability in the years ahead. And so is Casca. So we thought, what a great partnership it could be to celebrate World Car Free Day together and take small steps towards sustainability.
And so looking at that sustainability component, how do you go about, obviously you guys are experts in cars and they are in shoes, how do you go about that collaboration and ensuring what you're creating is, you know, in line with both your guys' missions and ensuring that the shoe itself is sustainable and what people are after as well from a stylish perspective?
Yeah, so there's a lot of parallels between, believe it or not, between the way we approach the design of the vehicle and the way that Casca is approaching the design of the shoe. So passion for sustainability, as an example, we have recycled materials in our vehicles. We're aiming to have 25% recycled materials into the near future. Casca is doing the same. They have actually, I believe it's 10% of the shoe is recycled tire. So in that sense, we're both taking steps towards sustainability and design. This shoe was inspired by our XC40 Recharge, our first fully electric car. And one of the design elements of our XC40 Recharge is the Thor's hammer headlight. And if you pay close attention to the design of the shoe, you'll see the accent of the Thor's hammer headlight in the front of the shoe as well. So two completely different products, you could say, but very, very intricate ways that we are using design features and sustainability language in both cases.
So one of the things I wanted to chat a little bit more about is Volvo's carbon neutral future, because full disclosure, I've done a lot of work with you guys over the years. I drive a Volvo, and this is something that's always top of mind for me. But for people who aren't aware of that commitment, can you talk a little bit more about your plans for the next few years?
Yes. So like I mentioned at the top of the call, sustainability is part of our purpose. And we are taking significant steps in the company to make sure that ultimately we're a climate neutral company down the line. The first, I would say, immediate is the move to fully electric cars. So by 2025, 50% of our sales will be fully electric vehicles only. And by 2030, we'll be selling 100%. Fully electric cars. And we've taken steps in Canada right now with the launch of our XC40 Recharge, and also coming up is going to be our C40 fully electric vehicle as well. So we're starting to bring these products into the market. Further to that, we're taking steps within our supply chain, because it's not just about the powertrain of the vehicle going fully electric. It's about reducing the emissions in our factories and our plants. We are making moves towards making our plants and manufacturing facilities around the world to be climate neutral. So we're very excited about that. And a further step is we're adding in more recycled materials into our products. So by 2022, 50% content will be recycled material in many parts of our vehicle. So these are just some of the steps, Amber, that we're taking towards a sustainable future.
And Matt, looking at the electric vehicle space, where are we in the marketplace of adoption? How many people have switched over and decided that electric cars are the way? And, you know, where are we at with infrastructure? Because we can build great cars, but, you know, do we have the infrastructure to support it?
It's a great question. And that's concerns that we get from some of our customers and prospects as well. Many are starting to take the step towards fully electric cars. It's still in the single digit percentages as a total of the entire amount of cars that are sold in Canada, but that starts to exponentially increase. So we are seeing, while adoption is small and it varies across the country, we are starting to see it increase exponentially, which is a great sign. And of course, you know, with government mandates that by 2035, we should be selling only fully electric cars in Canada, consumers are starting to get tuned in with that as well. Now, like you mentioned around infrastructure, it's not yet where it needs to be, I would say, and there's a lot of work we need to do together with the government and other OEMs to build out an infrastructure in Canada that's robust enough to really encourage everyone to buy fully electric cars, and that will come over time. But in the meantime, there's also great alternatives for customers that aren't ready to take the full step into fully electric cars. For example, part of our Recharge lineup is plug-in hybrids that we have across our models. which will give you a bit of the best of both worlds. You have the ability to drive electric on the batteries that we have as part of the plug-in hybrids. And then also there's fuel combustion there as well. So that helps a bit with range anxiety. So there's an ability to take care of a customer if they're not fully ready to go fully electric just yet.
One last question for you, because Michael and I both have these sneakers. They were gifted to us and we love them. They're super comfortable and stylish. For people who are interested in buying them, is that an option? If not, where's the best place for them to go to take a look at some photos and see more about what you're doing?
It is an option. If you go to the Casca website, you'll be able to see our partnership there, and you'll have the ability to buy the shoes. They retail for $198 Canadian. Full disclosure, you know, this morning I tried to get more pairs and it seems like we're almost sold out. So if you're hearing this and you're interested, you need to go online fast.
Yeah, it's a bad sign if you can't get more.
Exactly.
Yeah. I'm just checking out their website right now, and they do feature them on the homepage. So just wanted to say, Matt, thank you so much for joining us. It's wonderful to hear about partnerships like this come together and moving towards a cleaner and greener future. Thanks so much for taking the time.
Thanks for having me, guys. You have a great day.
Up next, we introduce you to a Do Not Disturb app on steroids.
The Feed with Amber Mack and Michael B. For everything new, now and next on Canada Talks, Sirius XM 167. Aptastic.
Welcome back to The Feed with Amber Mack and Michael B. It's time now to take a look at some new and trending apps. Let's be honest, though, Michael, not all the apps that you share are new or trending. They're just interesting, right?
Yeah. And I was just, I will be full disclosure, I was just telling Amber before in the break, I was like, oh, I feel like I let you down this week. They're good apps. They're just not that, like, they're not like, wow or cool. I mean, they're good, solid apps. Let's start there.
Michael is having app anxiety. Okay, so let's start with this one. It's called STFO. You can look up what that stands for. And basically, this is a smart notification manager. So the idea is that you can have certain filter rules for your phone so that you only see what you want to see and you don't get distracted by other things. I love this idea. I think a lot of people are distracted by their phones on a regular basis, and I still have not managed my notifications well, in the sense that, you know, I want to be able to get in touch with my son if he's at school and he needs me or messages me. But still, I have my notification set up so that it appears as a lot of other people get through.
Yeah, I think that's the tough part. So this is what's really cool about this. In fairness, I did see in the app descriptions, they had little pictures. And so I did pick it because of the pictures. So the first one says, don't bark. And it has a little picture of a doggy. And so prevent the same app from sending notifications. And there's lots of others. You can customize alerts. And I think that's what's really key about this app, is that you can make custom rules for notifications and filters. So specifically that problem that you were saying, you know, you have a bunch of notifications on your phone. You want to try and make sure that, you know, none of them get through when you really need to be left alone, except those ones that really matter.
Absolutely. And I think a lot of people are looking for tools like that. From what I can tell, Michael, just from your notes, it looks like it's available for Android devices, because I see I can use it for my phone. And we do have another app, which is really cool, because I know more and more people, especially during these winter months, are probably going to be listening to more podcasts. And this one is called Moonbeam, and it's a podcast discovery app that has a really good rating in the App Store.
Yeah. And so I have been listening to a little bit more on the audio side than I normally have. And it has been difficult to sift through the enormous amount of podcasts that are out there. And so I found this app because of that. And so basically, it's got short form audio. We've talked about this on the show before, is the future of podcast discovery. And so you can hear, you know, bite-sized pieces of the podcast to try and get excited about it, to find a new podcast that you want to listen to. So if you like it, obviously, then it's a lot easier to continue listening, and you can save it to your library and do all those things that you would normally expect that you can do. And then, of course, if you do like something, it the app makes it very shareable. So you can share it with friends and let them know about what you're listening to and why it's good as well.
Absolutely. So again, like I mentioned, it's just nice to be able to discover new apps because there's just so many, Michael. I mean, every time I turn around, I have a friend who's launching a new podcast, and it really does feel like there's a podcast for anything. And I also think that it's interesting to watch the podcast space evolve to the sense that there used to be kind of a standard time for podcasts. I don't know if you're finding this, but now I'm finding, you know, you can get a 3-hour podcast, and even some of them are 5 minutes. So
I was just about to say five. Yeah, exactly. I was just about to say that, like, I have found ones that are 5 or 10 minutes. And so, you know, even if you have that waiting at the bus stop or walking to the gym or something like that, you can catch a little piece of information from a podcast. The cool thing about this is that it's ad-free feed of curated moments, as I said. So just they've captured those little sound bites to try to get you interested. What I do love about this app, and I think you'll love this too, is you can tip the host directly in the app. So obviously when you are making content, it is a lot of work. There's an ability to give a little bit of coin to the host as well, who's done all the work.
That is very good tip, Michael. Okay, so PlayByte, this is a way that you can make games on your phone. I love this idea as well because I think, they call themselves TikTok for Games, but it's kind of fun in the sense that you can kind of play games created by other people that aren't really those professional level games. Is that my understanding? Am I correct on that?
Yeah, absolutely. And you can create them yourselves. And so it really is, I think it's a great way because it's, as you said, you can personalize the games as well. And other people have created them. So you're not just going into like a mass made game that everybody's familiar with. So I think it's pretty cool what they've designed and been able to create this personalization experience when it comes to gaming.
Absolutely. It's super fun. And, you know, I'm always amazed too that it's become easier than ever to actually create your own games. I know we talked a little bit a while ago about Game Builder Garage by Nintendo and how kids are able to essentially build their own video games, and a process that used to be totally inaccessible to the average person has now become so much more accessible to be able to basically, you know, just take your creativity anywhere you want to take it. And last thing I'll say on this, Michael, is that, as you know, one of the things I've always loved to talk about with kids, and I don't think I've been the best with my kid lately, so I apologize, is focusing on creation versus consumption when it comes to social media and the internet.
Well, and I think that's perfect because that's exactly what these guys are doing. So basically, you know, people have created all of these different games. They're very unique. So the more types of games you play, they then start sending you those types of games in your personalized feed. And so it really is focusing on that creativity. So really neat and a different way for kids to find games and play games and also celebrate creativity. So those three apps today, we've got STFO, Moonbeam, and PlayByte. So of course, if you've got an app, gadget, or product you think we should check out, tweet us at AmberMack and at AmBancroft80. And of course, use the hashtag TheFeed. Coming up, how technology is helping to better manage food waste.
The Feed with Amber Mack and Michael B. For everything new, now and next on Canada Talks, Sirius XM 167. In the spotlight.
You're listening to The Feed with Amber Mack and Michael B. Now, every year in the United States, over 72 billion pounds of edible food is wasted. Jasmine Crow is the CEO of Gooder, and she's joining us now to share how we can use technology to gather unused food and deliver it directly to people in need. She's also got a brand new book out. It's called Everybody Eats, and we're going to chat all about that and a whole lot more. Jasmine, really appreciate you taking the time. I guess the very first question is, what made you so passionate about fighting the food problem that we face, not only in the United States and in North America, but around the world?
You know, I get that question all the time. I was driving through downtown Atlanta, Georgia, in the U.S. When I first moved there in 2013, and I just saw hundreds of people that were experiencing homelessness. And I thought, you know, I want to do something. And I went home and posted it on Facebook and said, hey, next weekend, I'm going to go out and feed people that are living on the streets. And if you'd like to join me, come out and join. And so I was doing that for about 4 years before I ever started Gooder. And I just felt moved to do something. You know, I can't say that it was something I experienced as a child, but I did watch friends and family members go through bouts of hunger, and I just felt compelled to do more.
I wanted to ask, just from your research and even writing this book, where do we stand now in terms of the added effect that the pandemic has had on this issue?
Yeah, I think it's a lot higher. You know, in the United States alone, we were talking about 50 million people in 2020 that were experiencing food insecurity. That was up about 10 million from 2019. And so when you think about this as a global scale, 1 in 8 people across the world are hungry every single day. And in fact, a lot of people still die from hunger and malnutrition. So this is a big issue. But if you look at food waste, if food waste itself was a country, it would be the third largest country in the world. So we waste enough food that if we stopped that, we would be able to feed everybody that's going hungry.
So how do we stop the food waste? What kinds of technologies, what types of things do we have to do to change our processes of the way we, receive and process getting the food to us at the moment?
One thing I think is we definitely have to slow down the production. You know, I think there's this idea that we need to produce more food to feed the growing population. But what in fact we're doing is we need to use data to see if the food that we're producing is actually going to use, you know, because if we keep on producing and shipping things to stores that aren't being sold, then those items are going to waste. And so I think we need to start looking at the data. And using that as a basis for what we're going to produce. I also think, you know, more businesses have to get involved in donating the food that they're currently wasting.
Absolutely. And we do want to talk about your first children's book, Everybody Eats. We know that it's available October 26th. Can you talk a little bit about why it was important to you to write a children's book and what the next generation can learn about the challenges that face all of us?
Absolutely. So, you know, I'm a new mom. My daughter was born in January of this year. And in 2020, I just started thinking, like, I want to inspire this next generation. I was always asked, like, do you think you're going to solve hunger? And I would sometimes have to just be honest and say, maybe not in my lifetime. And so what my hope was is that if I can't do it in my lifetime, I want the next generation to take on this fight, carry the torch, and hopefully really end hunger. It's really an adaptation of my TED Talk, which was published in December of 2019. And I essentially just changed my TED Talk into a children's book format to tell the exact same story about my fight and how others could get involved.
Well, speaking of getting involved, you've just partnered with a rapper and a school. And you've Yes. opened a local grocery store at a school to help feed families in need. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Absolutely. We partnered with a multi-platinum Grammy-nominated artist, Gunna. He's done a lot of songs. You know, he's partnered with everybody from Drake to Lil Baby. So he's a really big artist. And, you know, he wanted to do something for back to school. And I said, let's do something that's sustainable and last beyond back to school. And so I pitched to him and his team the idea of building a grocery store in his old middle school. And it meant a lot to him because he went there with his 4 brothers. His mom also sometimes would work in the cafeteria at the school, and he wanted to be a beacon of hope to them. And so we opened it last Thursday was kind of the ribbon cutting ceremony, but it just opened yesterday. It opened on Monday, and it's already going so well. So many people are just getting involved and getting behind it. And the principal is just over the moon with what this is going to mean.
It's just awesome. And, you know, I hope people listening to this can think more about food insecurity, especially among school age kids. We know it's an issue for too many of them. How do you hope that this catches on in the sense of an idea of a free grocery store in a school? I mean, I've never really heard of that. I've heard of free lunches, but what are you hearing so far? I know it's early days in terms of the reaction from people.
We are hearing from schools literally all over North America that are saying, how can I bring this here? I've been talking to people in Ontario. I've been talking to people in Mexico that are like, what do we need to do? We need this. So many of our kids are going hungry. And that's inspiring to see that this is needed. But it's also sad to me, you know, so many kids are being failed. You know, they're expected to come in school and be children and learn and you know, have similar access to some of their other students. And the reality is they just don't. And that's just something we have to address. And what I think these stores will do, and I certainly want to open more of them across the world and certainly across the country to get started, is I think they give kids a level playing field. They give kids an opportunity. They don't have to worry about when and where their next meal is coming from. It's really meeting them where they are, giving a kid a chance to take food home for the weekend for their family. That's life changing. And that's what I want people to understand. We're really changing lives here. And until I talked to the teachers and the principals, I don't even think I understood just how big of a deal it was.
Well, listen, we just want to thank you so much for joining us. Thank you for all the work that you're doing. And we hope people read more about it, buy your children's book, keep following you on social media. And thanks for taking the time to join us on the feed.
Thank you so much, guys, for having me.
Up next, we speak to Erica M. about her new organization to help young people thrive.
The Feed with Amber Mack and Michael B. For everything new, now and next on Canada Talks, Sirius XM 167. Power Friend.
Welcome back to The Feed with Amber Mack and Michael B. Well, a new initiative called Inside Out is helping to empower youth to learn, work, and live better lives. To talk more about this, we are joined by our friend Erica M., who is one of the co-founders of the Inside Out initiative. Hi, Erica.
Hello, Amber.
Thank you so much for joining us. And I started to notice you tweeting about this organization, and I was so excited to have a chance to actually talk to you further about this. So let's first start with how this idea got started and why it's needed right now.
Well, it got started because I have teens, and my teens sort of led me down a rabbit hole of working with parents of teens, and we're noticing there's a real sort of shift to lethargy from our kids now, partly because of COVID. I mean, it's happening to adults as well, but the challenge is with teens, they need to be lit up for their future, and they're not. And I think it's incumbent upon us, the adults, to shift the way our kids are being taught, how they live, and how to help them plan for the future. And so I teamed up with some like-minded sort of progressive thinkers who thought, you know what, let's stop talking and actually do something about it.
So let's start with the teaching side of things. What is the gap? What is the gap in what they're being taught or how they're consuming information now that's preventing them from seeing a bright future or being prepared for a bright future or even believing that they can have a bright future?
Well, that's a huge question, and I can't address all of it, but I can start with talking about the education system, which is still being based on raising kids to work in the industrial era. And I think more than any other show on Sirius, this show understands that we're now living in, some people call it the tech economy, some call it the creative economy. I think about it as the emerging economy, because as Amber said to me a few years ago, that things are moving really fast and they'll never move this slow again. And our kids are at the losing end of that. So right now at schools, they're being taught to listen to authority, get the right answer, to memorize, follow instructions. That's old news. That's the industrial era. In order to survive and thrive in the very near future, the skills are different. They need to be creative problem solvers. They need to be critical thinkers. They need to be comfortable with change, because that's the only thing that's going to be consistent in the future. They need to be lifelong learners who are going to need to pivot and embrace curiosity. And school doesn't nurture any of those skills right now, in my opinion. So we are hopefully going to become thought leaders, where we partner with individuals like all of you to come together to brainstorm new ways of teaching and learning. And not only that, but to raise kids who will be the workers of the future, which is soon. I mean, my daughter is 17. She goes to university and then she's in the workforce. So many employers are not happy with the type of kids that are coming out of schools today. Well, that's our fault. We're not teaching them the skills that that the workplace needs today.
You know, just as you're talking, I was thinking, I need to send you to my son's school immediately because he goes to a great school, Erica, you know that, and it's very progressive. But still, in conversations I often have with them, it strikes me that there's just such a big gap. And there's this tendency for some of these schools to think that, okay, you know, kids are leading this like weird secret life online, and they don't realize like, that's part of the kid's life. And then they're teaching them in ways that are just not, like you said, necessarily relevant or helpful for the future. It is frightening. I mean, what are the consequences of this, Erica, from what you've seen, you know, at home, but, you know, across the country as well?
Well, there's the first problem of mental health. So I think that that needs to be addressed. The reason why we're calling it the Inside Out Initiative is that we believe that we need to go inside and teach intrinsic motivation and to understand, or to help kids understand, and adults, by the way, understand who they are. You know, Simon Sinek talks about like, what's your why? But you can only understand your why if you understand first who you are, right? So our initiative is going to help kids and parents understand the who and go inside, and then to help them understand themselves, their passions, their potential, and to understand their pursuits. Once you understand who you are and you understand that each of us have passions, and it's essential that all of us sort of tap into that potential and follow our passions, then we work deeper. We work because not only are we making money, but we love to do what we're doing. And what turns me on may not turn on you, Amber, at work. And that's what makes us all different. And that's what could really light up the workforce. So that's what we're trying to do, is change the way kids, when I say learn, I don't just mean academically. I mean, learn about themselves from the inside out.
I love this focus, and we keep hearing this inside out. So, and I think this is really important because obviously when I was growing up even, and I'm not that old, you know, that kind of stuff was considered touchy-feely or not masculine, or, and when you get older, you realize that it's okay to have empathy. It's okay to understand what you like and don't like, what you love, and share your passions. So I love that there's that focus there, but obviously people like me in your 40s are going to be parents or are parents, and you have a focus on helping parents as well. So can you talk a little bit about how you're also helping educate and give the support for parents to not only understand and help their kids, but also themselves?
Yeah. So first of all, you're asking me these questions about how we are helping. And just to be very clear, we launched 3 months ago. I mean, this is new. And the reason why you're speaking with such sort of authority about this initiative is because it's picking up speed really quickly, because it's resonating. We just did our first virtual academy bootcamp where we had about 70 kids sign up, believe it or not, the week before school started, for 5 days of virtual sort of learning and inspiration, which we thought, you know, we were afraid that no one would show up, but they showed up, and I would say 50% stayed right until the end of the 5 days. So that speaks a lot. We want to do the same thing with parents. So not only should we be educating and inspiring and working with and coaching kids, but we need to do the same thing with parents so they understand the language that we're embedding into these kids and the new sort of framing of what success is and what self is. And we also have to connect with educators. We also have plans to go into the schools. We want to build a program, a curriculum, the academy program, that will be part of the school system first as a student-led initiative in school clubs, but then actually become part of a curriculum. So we have grand ambitions, and we're hoping to find like-minded people to come and help us, support us financially, with their tools, with their expertise, and really make a difference in teens' lives.
I just want to ask one super quick question before we wrap up, because I was thinking about this a lot the other day, and you mentioned something in terms of helping kids sort of figure out who they are. And as someone who specializes in technology and the internet and culture and has written a book about kids and their relationship with that, one of the things that struck me is that kids have just had a year and a half where they've been stripped away from their in-person community, and often that defines who you are, and they've been left to basically kind of flounder on their own. Are you optimistic, Erica, before we let you go, that, you know, this sort of return to a little bit of normal is also going to help improve the lives of these kids who have suffered so much?
Well, absolutely. I mean, as great as technology is, and you know, Amber, I'm also obsessed with living online like you are. Nothing can replace in person. I mean, part of school is socialization, and our kids have lost that. And I'm just hoping that everybody gets vaccinated, and the teachers, the students, and yes, I'm saying it out loud, I'm one of those people, because I want our kids to stay in school, and I want them to build strong connections, not just in high school, but in university as well.
Well, listen, Erica, we just want to encourage people to head on over to IOI.live. We realize you're early days, but lots of momentum picking up. The more interest people have, the better it is for our next generation of kids. Yeah.
Yeah. And anybody can email us directly at hello@IOI.live, because we want to hear from you.
Awesome. And please do. And please check it out. And Erica, most importantly, thank you for your time. And I hope this is just the beginning of many conversations about the evolution of this initiative.
Thanks, Amber.
Well, stay with us. Amber and I are going to dive into the dark side of the Facebook files. That's right, guys. It's going to get pretty serious.
The Feed with Amber Mack and Michael B. For everything new, now and next on Canada Talks, Sirius XM 167. Socially Speaking.
It's time now for Socially Speaking, and this week we are going to talk once again about Facebook, but perhaps in a different way, in the sense that we have checked out the Wall Street Journal report called The Facebook Files, which really dives into the depth of Facebook's problems in terms of so many flaws and issues with the platform, based on a really intense review that used internal Facebook documents and research reports and employee discussions and presentations from Facebook that they got access to. So this is an investigative piece that, unfortunately, Michael and Aaron, is behind a paywall, and I wish everybody could read it. But nonetheless, we're going to kind of talk about some of the highlights. Michael, I'm going to come to you first on this one. Is we've been talking about this for a while, right? Like little pieces of the issues with Facebook, but this kind of ties it together.
Yeah, it certainly does. It's really hard to even know how to unpack this, because obviously in previous years, you know, 9 times out of 10, Mark Zuckerberg's just basically taken responsibility and apologized, or Facebook's just gone sorry and kind of moved on. So I just wonder, is this report and how many scandals and misuse of people's information and, you know, everything else that's listed, is this enough to change the company inside with its policies to make real change so this doesn't happen anymore? Because hasn't it moved past, oh, Facebook is just too big, it's, and there's too much information and too much data and too many employees, it's too hard? Or in fact, do they genuinely need to go in and do a full restructure and fix? I mean, these are massive, massive problems.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, Aaron, I know you've just had a chance to kind of glance at some of these headlines in terms of the 5 different sections of the report. But any surprises to you in terms of things that maybe you didn't know that are equally as horrifying?
It's it's kind of coming together as a whole for me. It's just making me wonder, like we talk about, you know, corporate ethos, corporate ethics, corporate culture. What is the goal of Facebook as a corporation right now? That's what it makes me wonder. Like the Facebook
product. It's a great question.
Thank you. Wow. Thank you. Like Facebook, Instagram, WhatsApp, Facebook Messenger, Messenger communication, WhatsApp communication. But now Instagram is hurting. It's sales, lots of sales and promotion, but hurting mental health. And Facebook, trying to hobbling documents that want to get America vaccinated. Like, what is the goal of the company? And I feel like their goal is if Facebook Messenger and WhatsApp could be spun off, their goal is communication. But the other products, I don't know what their goal is anywhere other than generating clicks at all cost, and at the cost of humanity, at the cost of soft on crime, at the cost of not promoting vaccinations, at the cost of democracy or swaying democracy. What is the goal of the company itself at this point?
I think it's a really, really valid point, you know, and they've lost their way. And you know, it's funny because... I honestly feel sick to my stomach when I'm reading this report. I truly do. You know, as someone who's been a champion of social media and believe that, okay, you know, there are parameters in terms of good that can be done, and believing that most people aren't evil and being optimistic and naive at times, I had shared this report and someone tweeted back at me and said, just don't forget that Mark Zuckerberg started Facebook as a platform at college called Hot or Not, rating girls.
Oh. You know what? In fairness, suddenly, yeah, does that change your optimism
it does.
In regards to Facebook?
It does, even I don't care how that was not
laugh.
That long
Sorry,
ago.
It's not funny, but
it
yeah,
was
yeah.
not that long ago, and we all know that, you know, he's pretty young, younger than all of us. And we know that at that time he was in college, that sort of objectification of women certainly wasn't acceptable. And yet this is the heart of where Facebook came from. And he's still actively involved. I'm not saying he hasn't matured. I'm sure he's trying to figure out what can be done. But he probably came at this from that same sort of naive place that I'm admitting to right now.
Well, and that, you know, we're not saying, well, you know, we are. It's like, you know, that's where it came from. So that culture, you know, in fairness, the likelihood of that to spread and grow in the organization is pretty high. Let's just quickly, just those five points in this Wall Street Journal. I just want to read them out really quickly so people really fully understand what we're talking about. So Facebook says its rules apply to all. Company documents reveal a secret elite that's exempt. So people that don't actually have to abide by the rules of the platform. Facebook knows Instagram is toxic for many teen girls. Company documents show, we talked about this on the show last week, Facebook tried to make its platform a healthier place and yet it's got angrier instead. Facebook employees flag drug cartels and human traffickers. The company's response is weak documents show. Basically, they didn't do as much as they could have. And how Facebook has hobbled Mark Zuckerberg's bid to get America vaccinated. So, of course, we've seen a lot of information, disinformation on Facebook when it comes to the, like, you know, how worthwhile getting a vaccine is.
Well, I have to tell you, when I was covering the election, just to circle back to the top of the show, one of the things that really, really frightened me was part of this report about how they had hobbled the vaccination rollout. And listen, Mark Zuckerberg and his team clearly wanted to do well. They wanted to get people vaccinated. But then I think it turned out that 40% or more of the content that was distributed on Facebook contained about vaccines contained misinformation or led to hesitancy about vaccination. So it's almost like this snowball went down the hill and it took off and the algorithms kept feeding people more and more of this. So even though his focus was to try to get as many Americans as possible vaccinated, and he believed that they could play a role in this, the exact opposite happened. And Aaron, I just want to ask you one last question on that front. Are you seeing it in Facebook in Canada or Instagram? I know you probably use Instagram more than Facebook today in terms of that sort of vaccine misinformation, disinformation, and hesitancy or anti-science behavior that comes out of that.
Thankfully, I have not. I have tapered off my Facebook usage over the past, I don't know, 18 months, 2 years to be, and I'm not trying to pat myself on the back too hard, but I don't actually use it that much except for work purposes, except for work accounts for which I have to maintain and monitor Facebook I barely use my personal account anymore, but I have to keep it active so I can log into the corporate accounts. So I have not kept up with the vaccine discourse or the pre-Canadian election discourse on Facebook, thankfully. But also, thankfully, on Instagram, I haven't seen that much, not at all, vaccine hesitancy. My main problem on Instagram is sponsored ads from restaurants. And then when I click on them, they're not in my region. And then I get frustrated that they're in another city or province or country.
I know this will, I don't want to upset anybody too, but like the systemic problems, we see all these negative headlines, and I know this shouldn't matter, but it does. In fairness, it hasn't really hurt the stock price at all. And I think that's also something to factor in. Nobody is punishing them on Wall Street either. I mean, it's still, you know, $340. It's quite astonishing. If it was another company, I would have assumed that the value would go down. People would be hesitant. They'd be jumping ship. Even users would be, you know, moving away from them, but they're not. So I don't know if they're going to change anything if things continue to do well and they make money.
Yeah, well, that's a tough thing to end on, but let us know what you think in terms of the fate of Facebook. You can find us at Amber Mac and at mbancroft80. And of course, please use the hashtag #TheFeed.
This is The Feed with Amber Mack and Michael B on SiriusXM Canada Talks, Channel 167.